The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back and happy Friday, September 18th, 2020. Yesterday on Constitution Day, the president said he will, quote, soon sign an executive order establishing a national commission to promote patriotic education. It will be called the 1776 Commission. It will encourage our educators to teach our children about the miracle of American history and make plans to honor the 250th anniversary of our founding. Think of that, he said, 250 years. I also signed an executive order, he said, to establish the National Garden of American Heroes, a vast outdoor park that will feature the statues of the greatest Americans who have ever lived, close quote. This comes at a time when the mayor of Washington, D.C. has established a commission, her own commission, that has recommended the taking down of monuments in the D.C. area, and if not removing, relocating and contextualizing them, including the Washington and Jeffersonian monuments. One wonders how we could possibly have erased racism in law with the Civil Rights Act, with the Jefferson Memorial being where it was and what it was. One wonders how we could have fought and won a civil war and enacted the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, never mind also the Civil Rights Act, with the Washington Monument being where it was and what it was. What rioters were not able to accomplish, as Stanley Kurtz points out, elected and appointed officials will. And what is that accomplishment? The distortion and removal of our history. Now, we can maybe understand why Nancy Pelosi could finally, and this week for the first time, why she could finally denounce riots. She did so yesterday. Here is what she said in response to a Republican House member. Quote, "Where are you when you are talking about violence, this or that?" he asked. "Well, we're there. We support peaceful demonstrations. We participate in them. They are part of the essence of our democracy. That does not include looting, starting fires, or rioting. They should be prosecuted. That is lawlessness," close quote. Really? You've been there, Nancy? I ask because 2 months ago, when you were asked about the destruction of a statue of Christopher Columbus in a riot in your own hometown, you responded, quote, "People will do what people will do." This would be the same Nancy Pelosi who denounced federal agents deployed to protect federal property from rioters as stormtroopers, you know, to invoke, as the left almost always does with this presidency, Nazi imagery. I guess this rewriting of the past doesn't have to go back 244 years. It can go back to July. Now, when President Trump announced the 1776 Commission yesterday, all sorts of criticism followed. My two favorites were from, of course, two academics. One of them said, quote, "What business does the federal government have in our schools?" close quote. The other was from Ibram X. Kendi, who wrote, quote, "They don't plan to radically change what people hate. They plan to hate the people that want radical change," close quote. To the first question, what business does the federal government have in our schools? I would only ask if the left wants the federal government out of education. Is that what they're asking? That would be an interesting new change of heart and mind. I suppose it might start with defunding not the police, a traditional state and local constitutional function of the states, but the U.S. Department of Education. I suppose it even forces us to ask what business the federal government has in school desegregation. Of course, that would be an absurdity based on the federal government's traditional role, of course, in desegregation under the 14th Amendment. The left remembers the 14th Amendment, don't they? That would be the amendment that was passed after the successful conclusion of the Civil War, which the Union and Lincoln, based on the words and philosophy of the Declaration of Independence, won. To listen to the left today, you'd think the Confederacy won. Perhaps that's why they don't think through the very implications of the nonsense they propagate. Of course it's the federal government's role to be engaged in desegregation, and of course because of the history, the very history they, the left, denies, which is why they can say absurd things about the federal government and its various roles now when it's under Donald Trump. Don't get me wrong. I think the federal role in education should be reduced, but it's the left that usually, I guess so long as it's not under Donald Trump, it's the left that usually wants it expanded. But what Donald Trump said about a 1776 commission is not a federal mandate. What he said, to quote again, was he would encourage our educators to teach our children about the miracle of American history. Encourage. And this itself comes from a pedigree the left ignores or would rather have us forget, which is from one of the organic laws of the United States, the Northwest Ordinance of 1787. But of course, that's a year, 1787, the left despises also. Nevertheless, the Northwest Ordinance was a law, the law, that empowered and determined how the United States would and could expand into areas that would become the states of Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Illinois. One might call them even battleground states. Anyway, education was not a small part of this organic law in the Northwest Ordinance. It famously stated, and states today, as still one of our organic laws, quote, "Religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged," close quote. There's that interesting word, isn't it? Encouraged. It's also important to note, to remind, that slavery was outlawed in the Northwest Ordinance of 1787 as well. You know, the first thing the left tells us was part and parcel of our founding and our founding fathers. Which gets me to Ibram X. Kendi's absurd argument. Quote, "They don't plan to radically change what people hate. They plan to hate the people that want radical change," close quote. This is the same professor at Boston University who recently said, quote, "In order to truly be anti-racist, you also have to truly be anti-capitalist," close quote. I don't think any of us hate people. I do think we hate and should hate Marxism. Not only has it been responsible for millions, hundreds of millions, immiseration and crushing poverty, but the deaths of over 100 million people in order to continually try to make it work via the barrel of a gun or the bars of a prison or the misuse of psychiatry. As for trying to change what people hate, yes, of course we radically tried to change what people hate. Kendi means racism and slavery, and we do too. We thought it pretty radical to found our country, after all, on the proposition that all people were created equal. Martin Luther King Jr. knew how radical a proposition that was. Why doesn't Professor Kendi? Reverend King, in one of his most famous writings, The Letter from a Birmingham Jail, wrote this, quote, "My approach has been condemned as extremist and extreme. But though I was initially disappointed at being categorized as an extremist, as I continued to think about the matter, I gradually gained a measure of satisfaction from the label. Was not Jesus an extremist for love? Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you? Was not Amos an extremist for justice? Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream? Was not Paul an extremist for the Christian gospel? I bear in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus. Was not Martin Luther an extremist? Here I stand, I cannot do otherwise, so help me God. And John Bunyan, I will stay in jail till the end of my days before I make a butchery of my conscience. And Abraham Lincoln, this nation cannot survive, half slave and half free. And, still quoting Martin Luther King, Thomas Jefferson, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. So the question is not whether we will be extremists, King kept writing, but what kind of extremists we will be. Will we be extremists for hate or love? Will we be extremists for the preservation of injustice or for the extension of justice? But there Professor Candy stands, with millions of dollars granted to him by the likes of Jack Dorsey, promoting Marxism and writing, as he also wrote in response to Donald Trump's commission, quote, "What Trump calls patriotic education is racist education," close quote. That pretty much sums up the moment we are now in. Patriotism equals racism. It's not new. We heard it from Malcolm X. We've heard it from Louis Farrakhan. We heard it from Leonard Jeffries. We heard it from Roy Churchill. We've heard it from Jeremiah Wright. And racism, the charge of it, not just of a person, but of a whole country, founded on the proposition of equality that took another war to concretize or reify, is the generic term for any kind of false consciousness, as Marxists would have it. What a misfortune that these Marxists never discuss or confront the racism of Karl Marx, racism against Mexicans, racism against blacks, and of course the deep running anti-Semitism, from labeling Jews as the product of entrails to arguing their God is truly not theistic, but money. Maybe we can understand a little better now why so much of the left is so anti-Semitic. It's all about the Benjamins, baby. That's how Ilhan Omar put it, putting Karl Marx's words into a more modern parlance. Benjamins, of course, referring to $100 bills with Benjamin Franklin's face on them. But what Marx had to say about what we would traditionally think of as minorities, Hispanics, Jews, blacks, has simply been suppressed or ignored by the followers of Marx. I understand why. When you rely on the philosophy of Marx to attack, condemn, and vilify a system of equality and freedom, and you ascribe, allege, and attribute racism as the basis for your attack, you can't show the much worse racism of your own godhead. I worry greatly about all of this, greatly. I worry greatly about the power of bad ideas, wrong ideas, inimical ideas. For it turns out they may be more easily deployed in taking down what America stands for and has stood for than the physical destruction of the statues that were erected to honor and memorialize those ideas. As Charles Kessler put it, quote, "It may be all too easy to defile the ideas that gave rise to the vast and soaring memorials to our country and to this vast and beneficent country. It may be all too easy and more easy than it is to destroy the monuments themselves." Turns out, to propagandize, you have to erase and distort history. And there are a lot of ways to do that. We've borne witness to a lot of them recently and ignored too many in our recent past. It is harder to build than tear down and destroy. It may even be harder to maintain and preserve than to tear down and destroy. But that, Nancy Pelosi, is truly what Benjamin Franklin meant when he told us what we created yesterday, 233 years ago, when he said we have a republic if we can keep it. Nancy Pelosi threw that phrase of Franklin's around an awful lot during impeachment. But the way she used it wasn't what Franklin was talking about. He was talking about preserving the idea and tablets of our founding. The left, however, knows exactly what it is doing, and doing in opposing this president's commission to promote patriotic education. It's not racist, and it shouldn't be controversial. It's the opposite of racism, and should lead to more harmony and unity. But of course, to revolutionaries, harmony and unity are what need to be disrupted and exploited. And I give you the crisis industrial complex as part and parcel of that. There are a lot of ways they do this. We are watching them. We have one main and important task: to stop it. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. Do you know about Dinesh D'Souza's latest film? It's called Trump Card, and it's an expose of the socialism, corruption, and gangsterism that defines the modern Democratic Party. This film reveals what's unique about modern socialism, who's behind it, why it's evil, how we can work with President Trump to stop it. Pre-order your DVD and video on demand now at watchtrumpcard.com. That's watchtrumpcard.com. Did you know Dinesh D'Souza graduated from high school here in Arizona? down in Patagonia, southern Arizona. There's a lot to do. We'll do it. And a lot of serious stuff to do, and we'll do it all. But I was hoping we could have a little fun today, too. It just feels like we haven't done a fun Friday in a while, and I'm not sure if we exasperated it yesterday with your sobriquet, Bill, your new sobriquet, which is actually Connie. Okay, there you go. That's what Connie would say. Yes. I have an idea on it. But first of all, if you watched Joe Biden's town hall last night at CNN, I know a lot of people have played a lot of different audio over it, and I don't want to overdo it. I feel by the time we roll around, most of the audio has been heard, and I'll do a few things here and there. In fact, there was this one. We have talked about, of course, the crisis industrial complex. I think I mentioned it in my monologue. We've talked about the use of the superlative in politics and the extreme reaches of language and descriptions, which leave one wondering and begging for an answer to just how much further it will go. How thin can you stretch the argument against your opponent? How ductile do you have to be to be a Democrat these days in the kinds of things you say Donald Trump is responsible for? And I didn't think we'd get to this point, but to this point we have gotten. Play this just one thing. I can't get it out of my head.
If the president had done his job, from the beginning, all the people would still be alive. All the people. I'm not making this up. Just look at the data.
Yeah.
Look at the data.
Just look at the data. Look at the data. This is the same Joe Biden who earlier in the week, when asked about whether he would support a vaccine for the virus if it was developed under Donald Trump, he said, yes, but after it goes through the Board of Science. The Board of Science, I didn't know such a thing existed. I don't know what he's talking about. The Board of Science, you know, no vaccine would, of course, get on the market or enter the market without full testing and approval by all forms of FDA and other kind of peer reviews and research, right? You know that, right? Well, only if it goes through the Board of Science. I don't know what he's talking about. But play this audio of Joe Biden again. I mean,
if the president had done his job, from the beginning, all the people would still be alive. All the people. I'm not making this up. Just look at the data. Look at the data.
What data is he talking about? All the people. All of them would still be alive. That's what the data shows. And he wants us to say he's the one who we should put trust in because he'll follow where the science leads. Well, data is a part of science, and science is a part of data. And he's telling us that everyone would be alive today if Donald Trump did something differently. The thing that's hard to follow about this is you have yet to hear Joe Biden articulate what he would have done differently. Now, we know he's criticized certain of Donald Trump's policies. And if you're going to call in and tell me, well, he would have been more strict with the mask, save your time, save your effort. Joe Biden has been all over the place with the masks. And in fact, just earlier today, was doing an event with firemen in Pennsylvania without a mask. Without a mask, as the firemen weren't wearing masks. I just think that when you say he's responsible for all lives, I'm not making this up. You know he's making it up. And people just kind of take this seriously. And Anderson Cooper just kind of stands there and doesn't confront him. You did see, of course, the video where he and Anderson Cooper last night were very respectfully socially distanced, far more than 6 feet apart when the cameras were on. But when they cut away to the commercial, they were whispering in each other's ears. These guys know they are perpetrating a farce. Our task is to know they are too. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. for all your video and social media conferencing needs, check out SquadPod, squadpod.com/Seth. It's a great product to collaborate with all your teams, screen share, chat, share files, video conference, all privately. They believe in free speech. They're American made, owned, and operated. In fact, right here in Arizona, principled, affordable, with tons of great features that the other guys don't have, and they don't do things the other guys can't guarantee you. They don't track or monitor your conversations. They don't sell customer profiles. None of your information is used or sold for machine learning. Check them out at squadpod.com/Seth. Good. The lines are building up. I like that. I want to talk to a lot of you today. 602-508-0960. We'll start with Rick in Phoenix. Hello, Rick.
Seth, we're rocking out.
Yeah, we are. A little Kansas for you there.
Yeah. All right.
Asia, I meant. Asia. Why did Asia? I say Kansas? Asia.
Kansas, Asia, you know, Germany.
Well, it gets confusing sometimes because there's this song. Warren Zevon did it. We often play the... I think we play his version, or we do now, and we more often play the Linda Ronstadt version. You know, Poor, Poor, Pitiful Me. It's got a lot of great cowbell in it.
Okay.
You know that song? Do you want to play it, Bill, so he knows what we're talking about? And that's the lyric that bothers me so much. I met a girl in the Vucaré down in Yokohama. Now, the Vucaré, do you know what the Vucaré is? My French is a little off.
I do not.
It's the French Quarter of New Orleans.
Wow.
I think it actually stands for translates directly to Old Quarter, but it's the French Quarter. I met a girl in the Vucaré down in Yokohama. Well, Yokohama's in Japan. So if great artists like Linda Ronstadt and Warren Zevon can confuse countries in Asia with Louisiana, I can do confusions with Asia and Kansas, can't I?
Well, I thought they just got it mixed up with Yokohama and Oklahoma.
Yeah, that could – well, yeah, but it's –
I don't know.
No, I mean that would be the rhyme, but they say Yokohama.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could have said Oklahoma. At least it's closer.
Well,
you didn't know this is where we were going here today.
Yeah, I have to depend. I have to totally depend on you for musical.
You have to be lithe when you call in. Your brain has to be prepared for this to go in any direction.
Right. Hey, speaking of live, let me throw this in here real quick before I get to what I called about.
Okay.
Hey, last week you and Bill were talking about culinary delights.
Yeah.
And
when was I talking about it?
I think it was last week.
Okay.
You and Bill were talking about culinary delights.
Yeah, remind me why, because he said something foolish, right? Like, yes.
Yeah, I think he was talking about chicken.
Yes. I said, what could make this day better? Because we had Bill Barr and pizza. And he said, what could make this day better but something like skinless chicken or something and Tom Cotton? And I just said, get out of here with the skinless chicken nonsense. Who goes to fowl when they think of a gustatory delight and then making it less good by taking the chicken off?
There you go.
Yeah.
So it reminded me of a cultural situation. Have you ever had a gastronomical delicatessen epicurean's delight from Farrell's Ice Cream Parlor and Restaurant?
Yeah, as a kid, are they still around?
No, they're not.
As kids, that was the ideal place to have a birthday party. Bill, Connie,
right.
Do you remember Farrell's Ice Cream? It's a fabulous place. I have pictures from, I think I was in the first grade, my birthday party there. They had a zoo cake. They would send off all kinds of sirens and lights. Yeah.
Yes. When I was in high school, I was a waiter there.
Were you really?
At the one at Christown Mall.
Well, we don't have places. I'll hold you over, Rick. We don't have places like that anymore, which is unfortunate. What's the closest you get to that? There really isn't anything like that. I used to go to Swenson's a lot. I ran into my friend who used to run Swenson's the other day, yesterday. But Sugar Bowl is kind of a. It's really Mary Coyle's, maybe, if that's still around. Those are old ice cream style shops. But they didn't have the party atmosphere. They didn't have sirens. They didn't have cowbell. Rick, I'll let you come back and make the point you want to. Be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. And it is a delight. Rick, I'm going to ask you to hold just 1 second. We have a spokesman from the Trump campaign calling in. And this is based on the great visit we have today from both Mike Pence and Karen Pence. We are honored to have with us Mark Lauder, press secretary, spokesman for the Trump reelection campaign. It's a delight to have you, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
No, thanks for having me, Seth.
Absolutely. We love that you guys come here. We hope we give you guys a lot of energy here in Arizona. We are Trump country. I'm not buying at all what the push polling is supposed to be showing. What are the Pence's messages here in Arizona while they are here, Mark?
Well, I think the vice president had a roundtable leaders in the area, and then he went to a Veterans for Trump event this afternoon, basically talking about why veterans, their families of people who have served or are serving, need to be supporting this president, because he's not only improved the VA, he's also rebuilt our military and fulfilled the promise about not getting our country into endless wars and getting our men and women who are in uniform home.
That is a great message. It resonates here in Arizona, of course, tremendously. The other message that I have been seeing, especially with the new ads that have come out from the Trump campaign, are about the contrasting economic records. And I wonder if you might say a word or two about that, Mark.
I mean, it's really night and day. You know, as we see the unemployment rate in Arizona going back to where it should be. And we've got a ways to go, don't get me wrong, but we're moving in the right direction. Why on earth would you want to go to the platform of Joe Biden, who openly talks about a $4 trillion tax increase, which is twice as much as even Hillary Clinton was proposing,
yeah,
putting on all the regulations to cause since World War II, the last time Biden had any kind of power? I mean, it's just not the right answer, and especially at a time when we are seeing jobs coming back, wages going up, Black Americans, Hispanic and Latino Americans, women who are making greater gains than the rest of the country. Now's not the time to go to Joe Biden's failed policies of the past.
And that's what's so interesting to me is we now have the federal data that was released this week about what we were able to achieve last year, with not just median income rising given the Trump economic plans, given the Trump economic policies, but also the lowest quintile, the poorest of Americans' incomes was rising as well.
You're absolutely right. It was helping those at the bottom end of the income ladder. And what's even more important, I mean, we saw record home ownership for Hispanic and Latino Americans, the highest home ownership levels for Black Americans since 2008. This is basically saying that more Americans are achieving the American dream. And again, there's a stark choice here. You can go back to the failed policies of the past, we can go with that freedom that is not only bringing Arizona back right now, but is bringing the entire country back.
Here's how I kind of know. You know, the other side, well, in politics, I suppose it's fair to say both sides have their own tells. You can kind of tell what's on their mind and where they want to go and what they want to talk about. But you can kind of see the Biden campaign's tells when they refuse to actually engage on this issue. this issue alone. He's very hesitant to talk about it, Joe Biden, unless pushed on it. And then, yes, you're right. He does admit to the spending and to the tax increases. But instead, he's much more comfortable. This is where his brain goes. He's much more comfortable talking about things that just make no sense at all. Like yesterday, I was just gobsmacked when he said if the president had done his job, all the people would still be alive. I'm not making it up. Just look at the data. Look at the data. He repeated it twice. They stretch these extreme levels of accusation. These what would be, I don't even know what the word is for it. This increasingly dire set of accusations against the president to kind of hide from the real facts of the matter. And I think that's kind of their tell, Mark. I don't know if you agree with me or not. This engagement in the superlative.
You're absolutely right, and it tells you something when even the mainstream media, which is all on board, with Joe Biden, they have to call him out for his lies and his misrepresentations, which you saw the Associated Press and CBS and many other call that out for the lie that it is. But the other thing, I think, to your broader point about the campaign, if you want to just describe Joe Biden's campaign, it's follow the leader.
Yeah.
You know, wherever President Trump is going, that's where Joe Biden is.
I've noticed
that. Whatever President Trump actually says he's doing, they actually say they want to do or that they would have done. I mean, there's really no original thinking, man. I don't even know if Joe Biden can remember what he said.
Well, I've noticed especially on COVID. Especially on COVID, I have yet to hear him articulate a series of proposals he would have engaged in that would have been different. I saw he was opposed to certain things Donald Trump did, but he's less consistent on his own proposals when it comes to things like the masking that Donald Trump has already engaged in than Donald Trump is. I just think it would be, I mean, I see how active you guys are traveling around the country, and it's hugely admirable. But part of me says this must be in some respects a really easy campaign, Mark.
Well, I mean, the easy part is getting the message out.
You take my point on that. Yes, of course. Right.
I do, but we've got to make sure that we get all the votes out, and that's one of the key things. I mean, I say time and time again, for anyone out there who wants to make sure that this president is reelected, you've got 45 days, you've got a month and a half, and I've got a simple job for you. Go out and find someone who didn't vote in 16.
Yeah.
Find someone who voted the wrong way in 16 and has seen the light. Some of you are going to get lucky and find an 18-year-old that turned 18 after 2016.
Right.
That's fine. Get them to the polls, but that's too easy. Go get me another one.
Right.
But if everybody out there who supports this president finds one more vote out there from that didn't show up in 2016 or voted the other way, we win this thing in such a landslide they can't cheat or steal it away. So that's your mission. This president is 2 decades older than I am, and he's wearing me out.
Yeah.
And he's been doing this for 3.5 years. So if we can work as hard in the next month and a half as he's been working for us for 3.5 years, we can actually get this thing across the finish line.
I love it. We have an expression on this show. It goes back to a project in the 1960s, Literacy Project, Each One, Teach One, which is to say, you know, just take one. Just get one. Just get one and convince them, or get one to activate.
I actually registered a voter on a bus tour in Colorado a few weeks ago. I don't live in Colorado.
Yeah.
If I can do it in a state that I don't live in, think what you can do in the neighborhoods and communities where you do live.
Exactly right. Exactly right. The economy is kind of an interesting thing, Mark, and I was talking about this with your colleague Hogan yesterday, because when you do think about the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, and you do think about the economy, primarily the issue of employment, there is a vast difference of an unemployment rates between the red and the blue states. The BLS puts out the numbers monthly, and the red states tend to be in the single digits, and the blue states are in the double digits and high. It's not really a close call as to what the method is to get this economy back going again, is it?
Well, I'll make it even clearer for you, Seth. I saw a chart just a week or so ago that in August of 2020, this month, the latest month, we had an 8.4% unemployment rate.
Yep.
And we have a pandemic.
Yep.
In August of 2012, when Barack Obama and Joe Biden were running for re-election, they had an 8.1% unemployment rate with no pandemic.
That's right.
It took us a pandemic to basically get the same unemployment rate that they had with a fully functioning economy. That should tell you everything you need to know.
It does. Mark, I'm sorry we had a couple audio problems here, but God welcome you to the state of Arizona, and Godspeed to you, sir.
Thank you very much.
God bless you. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Rick, thanks for your patience there. Had that special call in I wanted to grant, and I thank you for your forbearance.
Oh, you are most welcome, and thank you for taking that call. I that was a great interview with Mark, and encouraging.
Thank you.
Encouraging information. So
thank you.
Thanks a bunch.
You bet.
So what I called about initially was in response to your terrific monologue. In fact, you've been hitting home runs out all this week, Seth, and today's monologue was great right along with the rest of them. And it occurred to me something I heard years and years ago. Somebody told me, if you can't dazzle them with your brilliance, baffle them with bull.
Huh. Yeah, I like that.
And it occurred to me that those two doctors that you quoted, along with Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden and a bunch on the left, have become experts in baffling people with bull.
Yeah.
They have become experts at using inflammatory rhetoric that serves no purpose of accomplishing any progress in understanding, but what it does is it creates chaos and confusion, mm-hmm. and attempts to try to bully and force people into following their line of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely right. Absolutely right. They thrive on that.
Yes.
They thrive on the mayhem. They thrive on the notion of what causes a revolution, and it's usually a crisis and a manufactured one. If you can get that, and if you can't get a manufactured one and you have a real one, extend it as long as possible,
mm-hmm.
and distort it as long as possible. I mean, someone was engaging on Twitter in an argument the other day. Who was it? I think David Riaboy, my friend David Riaboy, was
yes.
talking about how this is a very classic Alinskyite tactic. And someone wrote to him saying, I don't think these 20 and 30 year olds read Alinsky. I think that's a conservative's perspective of the left. I got to tell you, Rick, I have a friend, I may have told you the story, Jim Davis. We were in college together, and he went from college to officer candidate school and then served in the Gulf War. And he said, you know, I was watching some of the trainings going on in military trainings in California in 2005 after I got back. And I said, yep, that's what we were trained to do. That's what the military trained us to do. He said to me, and I'm watching the protests on the street and the language being used, and I remember back to my college years. Yep, that's what we were taught in our courses about Saul Alinsky. This is all very familiar. It's the same exact training. If the students haven't read it, the professors have. Rick, thank you. God bless you.